Start recording. Is everybody totally confused about the homework now? I've sent out blizzards of email on the homework because I basically left out a few important things when I wrote it. One was for the problem with nest holes and individuals who could or could not occupy those nest holes. I forgot to tell you how many there were of the large and small nest holes, and the answer is equal numbers. And I forgot to emphasize that a nest hole is occupied by one individual, so we don't have to worry about what happens when there's more than one individual in the nest hole. And if you then do your bookkeeping right there, and one way to do it is with formulas, but another way would be to take a very large number, like say there are 2 million nest holes, a million of them large and a million of them small, and try to work out what the numbers would be. And then you'll see how the bookkeeping goes, and you can turn that into formulas also. And you should be able to see what kind of selection that is and whether it leads to an equilibrium or not. Should be able to get a formula for the frequency of large allele, of large capital A. Let's see, capital A are the ones that can live in the large holes, am I right? I got the P and 1 minus P backwards in the initial draft and have corrected that. And I hope I've got everything else about the larges and smalls correct and consistent with that. If you have doubts and haven't done the homework yet, which I think probably most of you haven't, download the latest version and work off that, because that's where I can put the corrections. And the other problem involved you... Let's see. The other... What was the other problem? I think I'm thinking of a problem from this week. There was one where there was the one where you have the geometric mean, you use geometric mean fitnesses to approximate a more messy case. That's in this week's homework, right? Or
that was last week's.
Last week, okay.
I think this one has a kin selection related.
Sorry?
I think it's a kin selection. It's like a Hamilton's rule.
The which, sorry?
Like Hamilton's rule, I think it was.
It's to do with it, and we're going to do Hamilton's rule today. Okay, I'm sorry I'm being flaky about this. That last week, I've not yet done the homeworks, but I had asked you to iterate gene frequencies for the actual fitnesses. Was that a big problem? Some of you will say, I don't know how to program. How do I do this? I mean, one way is get a friend to do it for you. But I think a lot of you have had exposure to one or another programming language or scripting language that you can make do that. And I would hope it's... I think it's something everyone should have to know how to do. Okay. Other questions before we launch into kin selection? Anything anyone can think of? I know, it always, every time I call for questions suddenly, then nobody has questions. But, let me launch. And I'll start by telling you the context in which the whole question arises, and that is an individual selection explanation for things like social behaviors, for example, behaviors in which an individual might act in a way that reduces its own fitness, but helpful to somebody else in, say, an insect society. Classic example being worker castes in insect societies who do not reproduce at all, but assist the queen in reproducing. If you try to make an individual selection explanation of that, it's very, very, it's nearly impossible. And so this was always a bit of a puzzle. And around about 1930, particularly in the work of the guys whose picture I showed you, J.B.S. Haldane, people started making what we would call group selection explanations for this. So they would say, well, the fitness of the individual may be lower, but the fitness of the group that it's in is higher. And I won't go through the quantitation of this, but if there is a sufficiently high rate, high threat of extinction of whole groups, you can set things up so that if the groups have different frequencies of a gene which predisposes individuals to do this altruistic behavior, that if that results in a situation where the groups that have the lowest frequency of the altruist favoring allele are more likely to go extinct, then you can just kind of sort of get the whole situation to evolve such that by favoring groups that have the higher frequencies of the altruist, you have enough increase of gene frequency to offset the lower fitness of the individuals that actually carry the allele. We're going to go and talk about another explanation, kin selection. And when we finish, it'll turn out that this also can be used to quantitate group selection. Well, that was an okay explanation, but it does require a rather high turnover rate of groups. So group selection sounds wonderful, but you have to have enough difference in gene frequency between the groups, and you have to have enough turnover, enough extinction of whole groups and their replacement by descendants of the surviving groups to make the whole thing work. And so it was an explanation, but it wasn't a really great explanation. There was a lot, there were worries about it. In the early 1960s, British biologist, V.C. Wynne Edwards, wrote a book about, wasn't it wonderful, group selection could be used to explain in things like insect societies. And he was not really quantitative in his approach. It was more natural history. And in reaction to that, people started saying, well, I'm not sure that this is the greatest explanation in the world. And in particular, a guy named William Hamilton, Bill Hamilton, so let's see, in 1964, published two papers in the Journal of Theoretical Biology that put forward a different explanation. And this different explanation came to be called kin selection. And it basically operated by saying, well, if it turns out that the individuals benefited by the altruistic act are close enough relatives to the individual doing the act, then it may be the case that the loss of favorable alleles, of alleles that would lead to this altruistic behavior, is offset by the increase of fitness of enough other related individuals who carry, some fraction of whom carry the favorable allele, that there is a net increase in the gene frequency. And this operates differently from group selection, although, as we'll see, it's related, in that it does not require whole groups to be going extinct at a high rate, but it does require the altruist to be engaging in the altruism to enough individuals who are related enough. And the formula, Hamilton had some algebra in the paper, and it was sort of okay, although not really precisely rigorous. But he came up with a formula which, as we'll see, is the relevant formula. He said, suppose that an individual, let's take the classic case that people have used for this is that of a bird making an alarm call. Now, in the particular cases of those that have been looked at closely, It's often turned out that things aren't quite as the scenario suggests, but the idea was, here, I am a bird, you are a flock, we're all, you know, we're many of us related to each other. We're all picking up seeds. Here comes a hawk. I happen to look up and see a hawk. Now, there's two things I could do. One is dive for the bushes, save myself, leaving you to be eaten. Okay. The other is utter an alarm call. Peep, alarm. Everybody looks up, hawk, and they all dive for the bushes. But in issuing the alarm call, I'm wasting time and calling attention of the hawk to myself. So my fitness goes down as a result of giving that alarm call. And that's the cost in fitness. And basically, if the allele is rare, then I've got one copy of it. Let's say it's a rare allele that has some effect in heterozygote. Now suppose that the degree of relationship between you and me is R. Now, what times? What R is the probability for this rare allele, the probability that the allele shows up in a particular one of you. So if I take one of you and say, how related am I by this R measure? It's the fraction of the time that you too would have a copy of the allele for an allele that's generally rare. Now, if you and I are identical twins, R is one. So we can make a table of relationship. And value of R, so I'll say twin, one. Sibling, so that we'll make it a full sib. Okay. Now suppose I have a rare allele and I want to know what's the probability that you, my full sibling, have it also. Anybody be able to calculate that out? Figure that out from Mendelian first principles.
Isn't it one fourth?
Be a little more specific about the logic there.
So your sibling...
I have an allele, right?
Yeah. So
you're my full sib. We have the same mother and father.
And so for that allele, I had a one and a half chance of getting it from... One in two chance from getting it from a parent, right?
A particular parent.
One parent.
Well, wait a second. Where did my allele come from? Did it come from both parents?
No, it came from one parent.
Okay. There it is in the parent.
Yeah.
That's true with probability one, that it came from some parent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what's the chance that you also inherited that allele?
One half.
It's one half.
Oh.
Yeah. And the other way of thinking of it is you can take each of the parents in turn and say it's half a chance of coming from this parent. And a half a chance of being passed on, that's a quarter, but there's another root, that's another quarter. Okay? So one half. Now, offspring, if somebody is your offspring, and you're where we are diploids in a random mating population, if I'm the parent and I've got an allele, what chance will it be also in the offspring?
One half.
Let's try some others. Half-sib. Half-sib shares a mother but not a father, or the other way around.
One-fourth.
Aunt or uncle. Chance that allele in you is in your aunt or uncle. Just going to give an example, but I don't have any aunts or uncles left, so I can't give an example from my own family. But say my father's sister, Aunt Anne, that her son Henry, who is in runs with his son a business selling Harley-Davidson paraphernalia at shows of, at get-togethers of Harley-Davidson motorcycle enthusiasts, who he is very loud in his praise of and says they are the nicest people he's ever met. He himself fishes but doesn't ride a motorcycle. Anyway, Henry, if I think of his mother, Aunt Anne, who's gone, what's the chance that if I have a rare allele, that it was in Aunt Anne? To do so, it had to come from my father. And it has then also to be in my father's sister, which you've already computed.
It's a half.
Another half. So this is a quarter. Now, if you go the other way and you go to nephew or niece, it's also going to be a quarter. It's working in the other direction, and that works out. Last one is grandparent offspring. Grandparent grandchild. So if I'm a grandparent, which I'm not, if I'm a grandparent, what chance is there that the allele will show up in my grandson or granddaughter?
One fourth.
Same as, so they're all the same. These last bunch are all the same. So anyway, there's some of the coefficients. Okay. So for each relative I have who is a coefficient R related to me by a coefficient of relationship R, there's a probability, there's that fraction of a copy on average in that person. Now, we have to ask what the benefit of fitness is to that person, or if I benefit more than one such person. Then what this is this coefficient times the benefit where the coefficient is averaged over all the people I'm benefiting, and the benefit is summed over all of them. Because I'm saving a fraction B of a copy in each such individual. And a fraction R of the time, that copy is the same as the copy I, you know, that they do in fact carry a copy of this altruism allele.
What is C?
Sorry?
What is C?
D?
C. What is C?
C is the cost to me. I gave the alarm call, what fraction of the time did the hawk eat me? This is kind of mixing examples. I'm a bird and I'm me all at the same time, which is a bit silly. So there's a cost. I might lower my fitness by 10%, but I might increase the fitness of X number of people. And we tote up the increases to their fitnesses, and we get my average relationship to them. And this can happen whether or not I know that the individuals are relatives. And that's very important because a lot of people make the mistake of assuming that this can only, that individuals go around calculating fitnesses of, you know, coefficients of relationships with each other all the time. And then you sort of say, well, maybe a primate could do that, but we're not really sure that a Medusa could do it. If you imagine this regard, that this implies conscious recognition and conscious favoring of kin, it certainly will work a little more efficiently if that's the case. But really all it needs to have is conferring a benefit on the neighbors, and the neighbors turn out to be somewhat related to you, even though you don't know it. You as the organism don't know it. So Hamilton's is a very compelling bookkeeping, and it turns out, as we'll see, to be essentially correct. In the aftermath of Hamilton's work in the 1970s, people did a whole bunch of very specific models where they set up SIFTships and things like that in equations for what happened in SIFTships and worked out what the conditions were. And basically the results either came out to be Hamilton's condition or to be slightly different from Hamilton's conditions just because of particular quirks, but almost the same as Hamilton's condition. I'm going to show you an imaginary case that we can simply analyze for the case of a rare allele in a big population, where the individuals interact, we imagine they interact only once in their lifetime in a single relationship, which isn't a mating. It's just they went out foraging together and hawks came by. And what I'm going to do is show you that that leads exactly to Hamilton's formula. So we'll start out with pairs of individuals. We'll start out with two genotypes. We'll have little a, and the heterozygote. Now, there are going to be big A's because of Hardy-Weinberg, but if we make the gene frequency small enough, we know that the gene frequencies are, you know, like the heterozygote is 2b times 1 minus b, and the little a is 1 minus b squared. And I'm going to approximate those. If p is small, 2p times 1 minus p is about the same as 2p, because the p squared term will be really small. So if p is 1 in 10,000, the p squared term will be 10 to the minus 8, and we'll make a small error by ignoring it. And likewise, if I ignore this, the p squared term over here will get 1 minus 2p. That's just to make life easier so we don't have to bookkeep all the possibilities involving big A, big A's. Big A, big A's are imagined at this stage to be very rare in the population. So now these individuals, there's a population, these individuals, they occur in this proportion, and they go out foraging with each other in pairs that may tend to be relatives. And there are pairs are, let's see if I get this right, big A, little a, and big A, little a. Big A, little a, and little a, little a, little a, little a, and big A, little a, and little a, little a, and little a, little a. So there's four possible kinds of pairs there. Now the pairs have roles, that they go out foraging. And let's say there's role one and role two. Role one is the one who's going to spot the hawk. And role two is the one who doesn't spot the hawk, let's say. And then there is a behavior which they either do or don't, which either occurs or doesn't occur, e.g. alarm call. And this allele predisposes you, the big A allele predisposes you to do the alarm call. It doesn't force you to do it. It could be that you're only 1% more likely to do it. And so what we're going to say is that the probability of doing this behavior, so I'll say prob of behavior, probability of the alarm call is C00. Let's see if I'm going to make sure I have my notation right here. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to use the C. C here, over here, C is the cost. On this side, C is something else. So my apologies for inconsistency of notation. We're going to be using other quantities for that. C01, C10, and C11. In other words, we're just using subscripts as to whether or not they have a big A. So the C00, neither of them has a big A. The C01, the first doesn't, and the second does, and so on. Okay. Fitness, if behavior, and if not we're going to have a table of fitnesses here. The fitnesses of the two individuals are going to be 1 plus S and 1 plus T in all cases. So I actually don't really need to make a whole table entry out of that. And if not, we'll just say their fitnesses are 1. So the fitness, whatever it is, if you don't have the behavior, is changed such that the one in the first role gets a change of fitness S and the one in the second role gets a change of fitness T. These are relative fitnesses. So we don't have to worry too much about the exact size of these numbers because it's all going to come out as relative fitnesses. Okay, so there's the table showing you the model. Now all we have to do is say, let's work out, let's say frequency. Oh, here we go. Yeah, there's the one more thing to do here. The frequency of this pair. And what I'm going to do is say that the probability, if I have a pair, and I say, is the first one a big A, little a? And is the second one also a big A, little a? Okay. The first one we can take to be a random individual. The probability that that is a big A, little a, is a 2p, because that's the frequency of big A, little a's in the population. But what fraction of the time is the second individual also going to have that big A allele? Well, we saw that was R. So I claim that in this approximation, which kind of ignoring all the p squared terms, the frequency of that first pair, of this pair going out for forage, is 2PR. Because it's not, if it were random, it would be 2p times 2p, it would be 4p squared. But it's not random. The one might be a second cousin of the other. And then it comes out as 2pr. The total frequency of all pairs that have a big A, little a in the first position should be 2p, because it should be their frequency in the population. Everybody's going out to forage. So I claim that this next number here plus that have to add up to 2p, and that means it's 2p times 1 minus r. A similar argument about who's in the second position gives you 2p times 1 minus r for that. And then we use the deep mathematical principle that the total probability of everything is 1. To say that this fourth one must be such a number that they all add up to 1, and that will turn out to be 1 minus 4p plus 2pr. Let's see if I got that right. Yes, if I do. Okay, so now what we have to do is just bookkeeping. So we're going to figure out what the average fitness of big A, little a's is, and what the average fitness of little a's is. Now remember, these are not mated pairs. These are pairs of individuals who are going off to do a behavior. They're mating later in their life. They're going to come back having survived or not. Having prospered or not, and then they're going to go do other things, and later on they'll mate. So not a mated pair. It's a behaving pair. So if we say, okay, what fraction of everybody in the population is a big A, little a, that is, in fact, if you work it out, is 2p. So let's see. Let's do the mean fitness first for the mean fitness of little a, little a's. I've put a bar over it. We're averaging over different cases. You can think of it just as little w of little a, little a. Okay. And we're assuming there are no other effects of these genes that are not having any other effect on things. Okay, so the answer, the first thing to say about little a, where are little a individuals? Well, most of the time, they're in this class. They are getting together with another little a. All of the cases where they get together with everybody else have a P in them. And if P is small, that's a small fraction of the time. So little a's are mostly going off to behave with, to do this activity, this foraging, with themselves. And ignoring the little p terms, we can just take the little a's and say, well, about half of them are in this role and half of them are in that role. And they're all, and we can treat it, we can pretend that it's all of them are here. Now, a few of them are up here, but that only occurs a fraction of the time. That's got a p in it, and p is a pretty small quantity. So I'm doing a certain amount of hand waving here. You could, if you wish, work through much more in much more detail and show that the thing I'm going to get is this thing I'm going to compute plus p times something else. And we're going to be, and that will give us a basis for ignoring that. So, yeah, please. Yeah.
So I'm just thinking about that frequency of that pair and like the probability of the little a's being in that one. And so if they, in the end, have no benefit because there's no call through time, wouldn't they tend to accumulate in another pair, like perhaps with someone who has an allele that will be advantageous?
Well, first of all, we're going to assume that they only do this once in their life.
Okay.
So I'm trying to rule out effects of what happened to you earlier in deciding what you do next by I legislate it out of existence. So I think I can, if I just assume it only occurs once. This is not a general model of social behavior. It's a model of a very specific case. But as we see, it's one that's going to yield nice results. So half of the little a's are in this role, half are in that role. The probability of giving the alarm call is C00. And so what you'll get is, half the time, they'll be in that first case, in which case C00 of the time their fitness is 1 plus S, and 1 minus that of the time it's 1. And the second term is being in the other role, and C00 times 1 plus T plus 1 minus C00. So there is the fitness of. And then there's some terms in P which actually count for being in other things. But I'm going to be leaving, I'm going to be showing we can ignore those later. Yeah, you had your hand up
earlier. Yeah, so the idea that we're ignoring the little a's in the other categories is just that because big A, little a is so rare that it's causing those pairings to be very rare?
Yes.
Okay, right.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
And see, these guys, the term involving this has got a 1 in it and no p's whatsoever. We don't have to.
Okay.
So the p terms will be, I mean, it has some p's in it, but they're small. Mm-hmm. These guys up here, these ones all have p's in them, and we're going to show there's a denominator to p that cancels that p out in a moment. That's our next thing we're going to do. I can, by the way, simplify this a little bit, because you get a C00 times 1 plus 1 minus C00 times 1, and you'll get a half 1 plus C00S. And over here, a half 1 plus C00T. Makes it a little simpler. Okay. Now we're going to do W big A, little a. Let me ignore the bars over them. Because just now there, it gets a little trickier. 2p of everybody is a big A, little a. Of all that, 2PR, there'll be these three probabilities of being in these three situations, and then we'll have to divide by the fraction of big A, little a's overall. So I'm going to go, I'll be putting something out here. In fact, it's going to be 1 over 2p. It's going to be 1 over the frequency of big A, little a's. Now here we get a little trickier, and I have to concentrate, and I hope I get it the same. I hope it comes out the same. 2PR of the time, they are both big A, little a's, in which case half the time they get the benefit, half of them get the benefit, 1 plus F, sorry, 1 plus C00 times 1 plus S plus 1 minus C00 there, and the other half the time C00 1 plus T plus 1 minus, sorry, not 0, 0, these are C11s, sorry, C11 is 1 plus T plus 1 minus C11. Okay, kind of a nuisance there. Okay. Now, 2PR, 2P1 minus R at the time, it's the second case, in which case, now remember we're only looking at the heterozygotes, the effect on the heterozygote fitness is C10 times 1 plus S plus 1 minus C10. And that's half of the individuals. Let's see if I get this right. Half, where, how can I justify this half? It has to be there. Let's see. It is saying we're counting, yeah, a fraction, 2P1 minus R, of everybody is in this pair, but only half of those are the big A, little a. So that puts a half in here. I have to put a big paren around it. It's a half times everybody. Then there's another term, and you do the same kind of thing here, and it's all the same except for it's 1 plus T. C01, 1 plus T, plus 1 minus C01 times 1. Okay. And now that is the total effect on the fitness of big A, little a's, divided by the, and you divide it by the denominator, which is the total fraction of big A, big a's in that are in these cases, and it's, which is just a fraction in the population, it's big A, little a. Okay. I mean, it's, so it's 2P. So you look at those and you go, oh, what a mess. Okay. Well, you have to just simplify it. So this one up top gets simplified into, and I'm going to copy it down because I claim, first of all, the P's are going to go away completely, and there'll be some adding ups of C's and 1 minus C's. And so what you're going to get is R. That's this one. The P's are going to cancel. Let me cancel out the P's. 2P, 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 2P. All the 2P's go away. and what you get is R times one plus, it's a half C11S plus a half C11T. Let me double check. Yep. plus 1 minus r times a half c1 plus a half c1 plus another 1 minus r times 1 plus a half c01 t. I claim that to be the case, and I then want to compare W little a with this thing, which is W big A little a. So if I subtract them, from each other to see when it's when one is bigger than the other. Well, let's ask whether one is bigger than the other. It will be, if I look here, the ones turn here. I think I got a half in the wrong place there. I think this is a 1/2 and that's a 1/2. I'm sorry. There. Yeah. It turns out that this becomes 1 plus, there's a r times 1 and a half r and a half 1 minus r, and it all adds up to 1. And it will be 1 plus a half c1 times r plus, I'm going to have to work off the book because it's too... It's a little too much. Let's collect the term in R. R times C11 S plus T over 2 plus one minus R times C10 S over 2. 1 minus r c01 t over 2. That's the W big A little a. And we want to ask if that is greater than 1 plus a half c00s plus a half c00t. So is this greater than that? The ones are going to cancel out. And what we're going to do is end up collecting them and getting the formula, which I give in chapter 2, equation 151. And I'll just, rather than try to do it on live here, I'm going to copy it out of the book because that way I won't make any mistake. R times the quantity C11S plus T. By the way, a lot of halves are going to go away also. Minus C10S minus C01T. Whole thing greater than C00S plus T minus C10S minus C01T. And you look at that and say, that's still pretty ugly. That is not encouraging. But it actually is going to work out and work out beautifully. Because now we have to think of some cases. Let's think of the classic altruism case. And let me do it on this rolling board here so the other stuff remains. So altruism, as in the alarm call. What are these C's? Well, in the alarm call case, what the C's are should just depend on the genotype of the first parent. Member of the pair, they're not parents. So C11 should equal C10. The probability that there's a call in this case or a call in that case should be equal to each other because it just depends on the first individual. And likewise, C01 should be the same as C00. So these two are equal to each other and bigger than those two. And when you do that, one thing that will happen here is C11S minus C10S. Well, C11 equals C10, so that cancels. So the S cancels out here. And the this will become R times, in that case, altruism, R times C11, let's call it C11. C11 is the same as C10. Sorry. The S term cancels, and all you're left is the C term, which is that. The over here, the S term, we're still in class. C01 is equal to C00 is equal to C01. The T's cancel, and this will be C00 minus C10 times S. Okay, we're getting close. Okay, now remember that this difference here, I'm wrong here. This is a C11 minus a C01. It's the probability giving alarm call if you have the big A allele in the first position minus if you don't. Over here, it's the probability giving the alarm call if you don't minus if you do. This thing is the same as that thing except reversed in sign. So in that case, I'll put it over here. You're going to get R times T is greater than minus S. I click. Now, look at that. It's very, 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 very close to Hamilton's rule, because what is T? T is the benefit you get. T is that B benefit quantity there. And S was the increase in fitness if you gave the alarm call, but of course, fitness isn't increasing. S is a negative quantity. Minus S is a positive quantity, the cost. So minus S is the cost. And so this is simply Hamilton's rule. So I showed you a simple naive case in the limit in which a gene frequency is small, in a limit in which there's only one social interaction per generation, and then they either reap costs or benefits, and if they survive, they go off and they make it somebody else. And so we can see that the big A allele will increase if this condition holds. And what is the condition? It's just Hamilton's condition. It's exactly Hamilton's condition. You could do the same thing at the other end where the big A has gotten very common. And all that you have in the population is mostly big A's and heterozygotes. And you could do the same approximation over at the other end of the scale. And if the effect of the big A was to give even more, be even more likely to give the alarm call, it would work over there too. And it would tell you, this tells you that when big A is rare, it increases. That would tell you that when it's common, it finishes increasing. And in between, it'll be something in between. Yes, please.
So does the negative S assume that the benefit that you're giving to the other individual is the cost that to yourself? Like those two things are the exact same?
No, they're just one is S and the other is T. You could have cases where you give a great benefit but at almost no cost to yourself.
Okay.
So alarm calls for birds, in fact, are in certain they are in certain frequency ranges which are hard for the predator to localize. So you could have a case where you give it a rather small cost, but you confer a great benefit. That's okay. That fits this because we're allowing a different quantity, S and T. We're not assuming one is minus the other.
Okay. So, but
they could be, but
in my thought process, though, any altruistic behavior technically would make S in that first one negative anyway.
Yeah. S will be in the cases we're considering. S is negative. So in this altruism case.
Yeah, so then wouldn't negative S, wouldn't
be positive? It'll be positive.
Okay.
So if you're
if the increase of fitness was negative, minus 0.1, then minus that is plus 0.1, and the cost is plus 0.1.
So then the idea is that the benefit to the other individual has to be even higher, times some sort of relatedness factor.
It all depends on also how many individuals. In this case, there is only one individual to receive the benefit.
Okay.
But if it were a different scenario and there were 10 individuals to receive the benefit, they could each have a small benefit, but the benefits could add up.
Okay, and so then you would add like population size to the RT side?
No, it's not population size, it's number of other individuals who went out hunting with you.
Okay. Alright.
Number of birds on the seed gathering expedition. Okay. We're out of time. I'm going to stop the recording.